I'm Spencer Howard, and welcome to episode 130 of the Film Dispenser Podcast. Welcome back, guys, to this special episode of the Film Dispenser Podcast. We're going to be talking House of Cards today, but Patrick is not here. Patrick is in the great north of Ohio doing wedding things and doesn't watch House of Cards, so he's excluded completely this week. With me, I do have an old friend and a great podcaster himself, Justin, the Naked Nerd. Welcome.
Good morning.
It is morning.
Yeah, it is morning right now, which is weird. I don't do podcasts in the morning.
I think exclusively I'm becoming a morning podcaster. So I like it. It's nice to sort of be fresh, not have any distractions of the day in my head to get in between us and thoughts on Frank Underwood.
That's nice. I mean, I don't know. Does your brain work better in the morning now that you're podcasting in the morning, or do you like still feel that you're getting adjusted to it and that your best thoughts? Because I feel that all my best thoughts come in one of two places, in the shower or really, really late at night.
Yeah, I think that this 10:30 sweet spot that we're sort of in right now is my – I've been up for a few hours, been moving around. I haven't had any distractions. I haven't turned on the TV. I haven't really been on the internet. I checked my email. That's it, you know.
Wow.
Just sort of chilling out this morning, and like then now I'm like, I'm ready to talk some House of Cards. I feel good. I have no idea. That could be completely different next week, because I also came home last night and like read a couple chapters of a book and read a bunch of interviews online and was like really just like raring to go at like midnight. So
were these interviews on House of Cards?
Oh no, this is all Star Wars related.
Oh. That's okay. I'm like, let's get real. It's only Star Wars things.
So. Yeah. I mean, no. Dave Filoni, the guy who's behind Star Wars Rebels and the Clone Wars series, he's done a bunch of in-depth interviews about the season finale and the big reveals at the end of the season, and a couple like there's a major death and things like that. And so I was reading all of his thoughts because I'm a nerd and I just want anyone to say that certain characters will be on the big screen one day, and he doesn't say it because he can, of course, but I still read anyway.
Well, before we started podcasting, you said that we could basically record for 62 straight hours. So the big question is, would you talk to Dave for 62 straight hours on Star Wars?
I think he could do it. I don't know that I could have enough questions, but I think he could do it. His answers, like the question will be like six words, and he'll go 150 to 500 word answers.
Wow.
It's crazy. He's so verbose, and I would love to talk with him. I think he could do it. I just don't know if I have that many questions.
I'm sure you could figure them out. You and Adam could team up together, and I definitely think Adam.
Oh yeah,
help. If you could only get halfway there, I'm more than sure Adam could get you the rest of the way there.
And if we added Logan, man, we could keep him for 124 hours.
Exactly, it'd be a lot of fun. I mean, I love it when somebody that does work like that is a creator of some TV show that's an offshoot of another major property, but they have so much for that original property, and they know so much about the history and the lore of everything and can just talk about it for hours, and you're like, oh my God, this person is amazing. So that's awesome. I need to check up on the show. I haven't watched it yet. I hate that when I see reviews and I see you guys' podcast, and I'm always constantly reminded that I have not watched Rebels yet. But it looks like it was a lot of fun this season.
Oh yeah, it really hit it out of the park. Unlike Clone Wars, it didn't have to really get its footing. It just was good from day one and just continued to get better the whole season. And it ended so strongly. It was, I would compare the season finale to any other TV show season finale in terms of how big it was and how excited it made me for the next season. Like it didn't play like a cartoon show or like a kid show. It just played like a really quality show that happened to be a cartoon Star Wars kid show. But also it's a kid show where they cut people's heads off occasionally. So.
Yeah, I mean, Clone Wars, I mean, I know that it is an animated show, but that's what I liked so much about Clone Wars was it didn't talk down to its audience. I mean, and that was what's so good about like earlier cartoon shows. They didn't really care that it was cartoon, you know, like for kids. they actually, like, they took on adult concepts and mature concepts and just put them in animated form, which is the best. Because otherwise you're just going to get, like, Barney stuff or, you know, stuff that you're not going to really get much out of.
I think genuinely kids learn more about life when you don't talk down to them, you know? I think it's
sure.
I think it's better. And it's sort of like 80s movies that were PG and by no way would be PG today.
Not at all.
I think it's the same idea, though. Like, I think I learned more about the world in a good way and in a constructive way from those PG movies that maybe shouldn't have been, like, than I do from anything. Or, I guess I'm not a kid anymore, but than I would have now watching, like, what's it, the, I don't know. Any animated
Ninja Turtles right now.
Oh,
I mean, okay, like, look at it. If you look at it, and I know we're way off topic, but and this is just the first movie that came to my head. I think it was PG back in the day, was Brewster's Millions.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that movie teaches you a lot of life lessons in a, you know, in a comical way. And nowadays, I mean, any movie like that would just be, you know, they're trying to basically go for, like, buzzwords that are going to trend on Twitter or social media, so it'd be really stupid. It would be starring, like, the Kardashians or something. Yeah, it would be a train wreck.
Did you see there's an article recently by some financial journal that got spread around a lot of the entertainment websites where they did a study on the financial value of tweets in the time, like, to the studio. So basically, like, a tweet 3 months out from a movie saying, I'm so excited to see this, like, if you or I did it, is like, financially valuable at, like, $1,200 for the movie studio. So if you get 1 million people going, I cannot wait to see this movie, like, say The Avengers is an easy one right now.
Yeah.
But if you're not responding to anything and you're just organically, all of a sudden you have the thought and you tweet, I cannot wait to see Avengers Age of Ultron. It looks amazing. That's $1,200 you just put in the studio's pocket. And that,
that's insanity.
But the value decreases the closer you get to it. So that's why you're getting all of these advertising campaigns that give away everything in the beginning, months in advance, because it gets you tweeting early, and potentially the value is much higher for them. So I don't know. You just made me think about that with the buzzword thing, and it's weird how the industry is functioning in terms of buzzwords and building things that have nothing to do with the actual quality of the film. It's just all about getting people talking about it.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the simple fact that nowadays, you know, okay, the weekend that Avengers comes out, we won't even be talking about Avengers. We'll be talking about Captain America 3.
Right.
And it's like we never live in the moment, and maybe that's because, you know, we've been trained through social media now to where we're always looking ahead, and these businesses are like, well, we've got Avengers out. We don't really care about it anymore. We're not going to put any, you know, promotional stuff out. Let's get Captain America 3 buzzwords going, you know, immediately. So, I don't know. That is really strange. And, I mean, I know that a lot of companies, they put a lot of value in Twitter and people live tweeting and stuff. We were talking before we started the 12 Monkeys podcast that I do. It's a great show, but it may not get renewed. And one of the big things that they're looking at is, you know, getting in that Nielsen top 5 trending shows on Friday nights or whatever night that the show's on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's crazy. And we need to start getting paid for those tweets.
For real, that's the
Disney,
thing.
Marvel.
That's the thing. My Twitter feed, which is to me started as this like outlet for my random thoughts a long time ago, is now just become a marketing tool for other people.
Yeah,
and it's interesting how that works, and it's also a marketing tool for us. I mean, we're part of filmdispenser.com and all these podcasts that we do. I mean, it's the same for us, and we're part of the problem, Justin.
Well, we need to start getting paid like Kevin Hart, because I do know that he got paid like $1.5 million or something that came out of those Sony leaks.
Oh, my gosh.
For a tweet. And it just – and you can tell so much whenever it's, you know, man, this movie looks like the best thing ever.
And then they're talking about Get Hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Go see Get Hard in theaters next week. You're like, yeah, you know, and it's always like for some random person that, you know, that person's probably never going to go see that movie, but they just got paid to go tweet about it. So,
right.
Interesting stuff.
I wanted to ask you, just because you mentioned the Avengers and, or we were talking about the Avengers and Captain America and stuff. Are you going to do the 27-hour Marvel marathon?
Lord, no. That just sounds That sounds like we're going to see on the news, and I feel bad that I'm even saying this, but somebody, like, died watching, you know, Avengers 27 hours straight.
Iron Man 2 killed somebody.
Exactly, yes. This person didn't go get water or food for 27 hours straight. Hopefully they will have something in place for that, because that is a awfully long time to watch Marvel movies. And I don't even think I like the Marvel movies enough to sit through that.
I think there's only one that I wouldn't want to sit through again. If they spread it out over like a 4-night thing, yeah, like, and did little chunks like all every night leading up to the Avengers, I would be like down for that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But yeah, 27 hours. I probably wouldn't do it just because like I'm older now.
So. Our bodies can't really physically take that anymore. That's like punishment right there.
Too much popcorn is not good for Spencer anymore.
Yeah exactly. Somebody's clogging their arteries right there in the movie for 27 hours straight. I would do Star Wars. I know we were talking about Star Wars earlier.
Oh, yeah.
But I would definitely do that. I would even do like a Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels marathon up until, you know, the episode 7.
Right. Like at home or in a theater?
I'd do in a theater.
Like that's like six seasons, like 24 episodes a season. That's intense.
I wonder how long that is. I don't want to do the math right now because that would probably be boring.
I purposely stayed away from the math because I watched that show over the course of like a month and was like, I don't want to know how much time I spent doing this.
Yeah, you're like, I do not want to be ashamed of myself that I have watched 300 hours of television in the span of a month.
I wouldn't be ashamed. I just wouldn't want anyone to then judge me and make me ashamed. So I was like, and if I know I'll tell somebody. And so like, so I was like, nope, I'm not going to do it. Just stay away from it.
Yeah, it's better. It's best just to stay away from that. I mean, we're about to talk about House of Cards, and I mean the thing to do now is you just it comes out on that Friday. And you either pick that Friday or Saturday or Sunday, and you watch all 13 episodes straight. And, I mean, that's a physical punishment right there as well.
Well, let's talk about House of Cards specifically. So it came on Netflix a couple of years ago, for season one, and, like, exploded Netflix into the TV sphere. Like, it changed everything. I do feel that if House of Cards had been a giant failure, the tone of Netflix and their TV and original program would be much different. I don't even know that people would have trusted to see Orange is the New Black as many as did at the front end because House of Cards was such a big deal and it was such a big hit. Everyone really liked it. And like it was a phenomenon which has now continued on. Did you binge watch the first two seasons when they came out like every year or did you come to it late? When did you come to the show?
I watched it the day that it aired, the first season. I mean, I was extremely excited for the show, namely just because of Kevin Spacey alone. Like, I mean, that was what sold me. It's David Fincher as well?
That's right, yep.
Yeah, those two, the combination, because I remember, like, you know, reading on IMDb or something on my phone, like, a year before the show started, and I was like, David Fincher and Kevin Spacey? This is going to be so good. And, so I was eagerly anticipating it, so I watched it day one, binged it that weekend or that week, whatever, and then last year, it came out during Valentine's Day, and I was like, honey, this is what we're getting for Valentine's Day, Frank Underwood's bringing us 13 episodes to watch. So, yeah, I binge-watched it on Valentine's Day weekend last year. So
yeah, we did the exact same. That was for the same reasons. Fincher and Spacey, there was no saying no to that. And then after season one, I really love Robin Wright. I think she's really amazing in the show. And so I was looking forward to season two. That's what we did for Valentine's weekend as well. This one, I did start on Saturday. And then I finished it Tuesday. I believe. And so yeah, just a couple of days, not the full weekend, but as we've talked about on the podcast, Patrick is living with us. And so it's a little bit of a distraction to have a third adult in the house that we're like, it's not into what we're into. And it's like, and he's like sitting there, and he's like, politics. And I'm like, go jump off a bridge.
Well, House of Cards is, it's not necessarily a couples TV show, but to me, it's such a perfect couples TV show.
Oh, yeah.
it's fantastic to watch together.
But yeah, so we didn't get to Katie's actually finishing on her own because I'm on a different schedule now. But we watched like the first half together and really enjoyed it. And I don't think she's finished yet. So, but I had to finish. I had to talk about it. And what I do for this podcast, I sacrifice my marriage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think if Tori did not watch House of Cards with me, she would be. I would be in the doghouse for a while if I watched that one on my own. So it was very nice of Katie to not punish you.
She came to me immediately and said, I'm not – because she's going to bed extra early because of the baby cooking and all that stuff. And so like she's like, look, I can't stay up late like I used to, and you've got this different schedule. Please go ahead and watch it without me so that you can podcast and stuff. Like she came to me. It was great. I didn't even like reverse psychologize her. Like I just said,
You didn't use Frank Underwood tactics on her?
There was no knocking on the table, like nothing. And yeah, so it worked out pretty nice. And so I may actually watch it with her some this weekend and kind of watch the back half again, just to see if she wants to. But either way, I am finished. And I wanted to see, you know, season one is more, you know, it's Frank, us getting to know him really and seeing what links he'll go to. The season two is much more about him becoming, you know, working towards becoming president. And now he's there. He's reached the goal. And this whole season is about what happens when Frank Underwood gets what he wants completely. And it's full of, like, a lot of missteps, and like I tweeted at one point that I felt like this whole season was about everything that we would expect to go right for Frank based on what we've seen and his master manipulation just going wrong. Every time I think one thing's going to happen, something else happens in this season, and I found that actually really enjoyable to see Frank like trying so hard to be ruthless and failing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird season in the sense that, yeah, like you said, we've seen this build up of Frank, you know, basically doing every dirty deed in order to get to where he wants, and that was to be president, and then he finally becomes president, and it's just, I mean, a comic of errors, like, just everywhere in this entire season, and it's weird to see him so powerless as the president.
Well, you know, it's funny. I should throw out a spoiler alert. Now, season one and two, I don't feel bad for saying anything about those because we're obviously talking season three. But, I mean, just so you and I were just free to talk about it, spoiler alert for the whole season. Most of you have binged it at this point or are in the middle of binging it, so you can come back and listen after you finish. But let's just say that's open and on the table. Just
talk about anything. I forgot about saying something about that because, yeah, some people may not have seen it yet. But it is weird too how you podcast this. I mean, you do TV show podcasts, I do TV show podcasts, and they're in the traditional format of week to week, but it's so different with Netflix shows and Amazon Prime shows. It's like, how do you podcast that? And I've seen other podcasters and they kill themselves because they podcast 13 episodes in a weekend.
Oh.
That sounds miserable.
But then they drop all 13 at one time?
They do.
Oh my gosh. It's like that you're just done in a weekend.
Yeah, you're just done. The one that I listen to the most, and if you're like just really hungry for more House of Cards, mm-hmm. is the House of Cards Bald Move podcast. They're great. Like okay. I love their dynamic. They've got great chemistry. They're funny. But what they're doing, they changed it up. They did it that way last year, and it failed miserably for them. They even admitted it. So they're breaking it up to where they do like one episode on, say, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So they're dropping three episodes a week.
Good Lord.
Yeah, but they're recording them in blocks, though.
Yeah.
Which I still think is maybe the wrong way to go about it. Like, if they're recording three to four in a sitting.
Right.
That would be really tough. I've done that before, and it's not that much fun after you get to, like, the fifth episode of recording in a row.
I mean, yeah, I've done it on different subjects. And even the change and shift is not that great, and then that's intense. Yeah, it's interesting because like I've looked at some Netflix stuff, and I really love a couple of Netflix series. I'm excited about other things coming out, and it's like I would like to do that and just to have the conversation. But yeah, Daredevil. And then honestly, I'm not going to lie. I know Jupiter Ascending wasn't great, but Sense8 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the one with the Wachowskis?
Yeah, like I'm totally pumped for that. I think the thing mm-hmm. that's messing them up is that they can't go longer in their movies. I think they could spend 10 hours on a movie, it'd be awesome. That's what this is going to be. And
I would love to see that. I mean, they build those worlds so nicely, and we only get 2.5 hours in them.
I mean, so I would love to talk about it, but it's like this seems to be like what we're doing now with a special episode talking about it seems to be the better move for me because I'm doing three other podcasts, and it's like,
exactly.
I don't know. We'll see. The future, I mean, the trends will be set, and then we'll sort of see what happens. But yeah, anyway, House of Cards, let's get back to that, not the podcasting format. So since the spoiler alert is up, I mean, last year, and I have a point with this and bringing this up, but last year we had a scene with Frank and his wife and Meacham.
Yes, the infamous Meacham scene.
It's a three-way scene, sort of. It goes away. It kind of like does the old school. The camera pans away, but you know what's happening, and like they're all getting it on. This season, to me, besides it being a season of Frank failing, it was also a season of Frank being forced to confront a lot of stuff about himself.
Yeah.
That he sort of had decided that sat at a certain level under the table. Like, this exists, but we will not talk about it, and it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter because the presidency is more important, but because the presidency is failing, he's forced to deal with it because of this writer that's along the, you know, with everything, and kind of bringing up these tensions of his life, and then a particular scene in episode, I believe, 12, with his wife, that it's pretty much full on, like she wants him to have sex with her, and he can't look her in look at her while they do, and she's like, I'm done. Like, that's it. So to me, it was like everything about Frank in this season failed, from his presidency, his marriage, his sexuality, everything got put on under the microscope, and none of it held up. And that's like, it's a frightening thing to watch this guy, who I felt was one of the most powerful, like, dangerous people on TV, fail. It was very fascinating.
Yeah, no, it was very fascinating. Do you think that scene had more to do with his sexuality, though, or did it have more to do with just because we saw throughout this entire season, Claire and Frank had always, they always wanted certain things. You know, Frank wanted to be the president, and Claire always wanted things, but they were kind of put on the back burner because it was all about Frank's needs. It was about what he wanted. So in this season, you know, Claire's like making a power play of, I want this, I want that, I'm gonna be the president one day.
Oh, yeah.
We need to put that play in motion now, because we're not sure if you're going to get reelected to be the president in 2016. So I agree with you that it was partly that. Like, his sexuality has definitely come to the forefront in this season, even more so than last season with the Meacham scene.
It was so funny. Not as direct as that, but still more at the forefront. So interesting.
Yes. Yeah, it is weird how they played that out this season. But I just wasn't sure if it was all of the sexuality coming into play, or if it was the sense that he has just become like so sick of Claire, because, and I'm not saying that's rightfully so, but throughout the entire season, she kept doing things and doing things, and it kind of like undermined what he was trying to accomplish. And so to me, it was like at that point, he's just like, I just don't even want you around anymore, because you've basically, his thing, his ultimate goal was to be the president, and she's kind of undermine him throughout the season of making it where that's getting harder and harder to accomplish.
Yeah, I think that more than anything else, what's at play is that the deal is that even with their personal faults or their other, like their personal desires, they would always work together. So I think that's in play, that she wants to have sex. She wants this right then. And then he can't do that for her. But the trick is that the thing for me that stood out the most is she says, I want you to look at me.
Yeah.
And then she says, like, I thought not, when he can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's the line that's the key to me. That's the line where she's like, we have a deal, and this is what I want, but you were unable, because of who you are, to fully give me what I want. And in this case, the who he is someone who's not – I don't think he's into women.
I don't think so as well.
And so I think that what happened is she reaches this point where she went, I will make compromises, but I want everything that I want. And what she wants in that moment is her husband to look at her, and he can't do that. And so she throws that at him. And what – I mean – I think for us, if there was any question of like which team, like that's done,
he's team Meacham for sure,
absolutely. And but for him, but the big thing for him, and why I think this is so important, is he's never had to fully deal with that. Like he's very much probably the most closeted person in the world, and like because he's the president, and then now he's got to face that, and with the final moments of the season, she's leaving him.
Yeah.
And like because of this. And so I know he'll spin it and it won't come out, but for the first time ever, I think Frank is having to look Frank right in the mirror and deal with it. And I feel like next season is Frank having to deal with himself. And that's so fascinating to me because he's a guy who's controlled so much. He's even controlled his own perception of himself.
Yeah. Well, that's a very valid point. I like too the way that scene played off of the scene earlier in the season, you know, where Claire gave what Frank needed, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she obviously didn't want him at that time. They were fighting at the time, and she still, that was an awkward scene. Very awkward. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. One, yeah, I do.
Where he was crying and she comes in there and gets on top of him, and yeah, they do things. but yeah, no, I mean, it's a very interesting show just basically because of Frank Underwood. I mean, I think it would be a good enough show if that was the only storyline throughout the seasons, was just Frank's story. But there's so many other like little side stories that I happen to really love, and I think that they're really interesting. I think that a lot of people were upset with this season because it did focus on Doug's story a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was a very focal point of this season, and I read a lot of reviews where a lot of people just didn't really like that. They don't think that Doug's character is as strong. Which is not as strong as Frank's his character on the show. I mean, that's why we come to watch the show, is for Frank and Claire Underwood. I mean, that's their chemistry, their storyline. That's why you watch the show. But I love all the side stories as well.
Well, I feel like with Doug, I enjoyed the Doug stuff mostly because I felt if Doug came in as Secretary of State by the end of the season and they didn't work so hard to build that and show why that would happen,
yeah,
there's no way I would have believed it. Because of everything that happened with Doug, and Frank's not a guy who gives second chances. But in the case of how this played out, I absolutely believe that that's where Doug ended up. And if the goal was to get Doug there, you have to sell that, especially because of who Frank is. So for me, it's like, yeah, I read some of the stuff too, kind of dismissing the Doug stuff. But it's like, no, I honestly wouldn't believe anything about where Doug is, even with what Doug does to Rachel in the end, like when he actually does.
Oh, man, that was brutal.
It absolutely was. But I would not have bought it if we hadn't spent so much time seeing what he's gone through, who he really is, how, you know, his stuff with his brother, just sort of seeing the dynamic of who Doug actually is outside of being Frank Underwood's lackey. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't have bought it. So for me, I enjoyed it. And I think his name's Michael Kelly. I think he's a great actor, and he's got this great political look, and
yes.
Like, it's just like everything about it just worked for me, because I think I wouldn't have bought it without all the extra.
I think everybody in the show has like a fantastic political look.
It's immaculately cast. Like,
yes.
It's so incredible.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody that just stands out to me, and I'm just like, oh my god, what was the casting going on with that person? But I mean, Heather Dunbar to me was like the perfect. I don't know who the actress is, but I thought she was perfect casting. I mean, Jackie Sharp, I love her character.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I was kind of pissed off this season at some of the things that they did to her character, because they made her out to be kind of a weaker character. And I'm like, no, she was every bit, you know, an equal to Frank in season two, in my opinion. And I mean, she's a dirty player. I mean, she's you know, obviously she's very intelligent. But some of the things they did to her in this season, I wasn't happy with. But I like the overall story that she had throughout the season.
It's like the presidency weakens everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone around it, because she then is so like, she's like bowing to the president, trying to get whatever she can because he is the president. And then the president's weaker, and the first, everyone is just affected by this role. It's fascinating in a show where the goal had been to get to the Oval Office. The Oval Office is the thing that crushes everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And we saw in season two, it crushed poor Walker. So.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe the place to go is just the Supreme Court, and Heather Dunbar should have taken that one up, because, you know, we see her character, how she progresses in this season, and the Oval Office is crushing her because she had all these fantastic morals, and as the season goes along, she just starts to lose them because she wants to beat Frank. I'm just like, now I can't vote for you anymore. I was going to vote for you, Heather, but now you're just as bad. You're just the same as Frank to me at this point. So, which was interesting to see her as she progressed.
I mean, I guess it's just that need for power, man. I can't, like, I like to think I'm better than that, but I've been watching the show wonder, like, what would I be like if I were running for president? Like, would I do this stuff? If I, like, you get so close, you know? Like, yeah, what would you do? I could think I wouldn't, but you don't know. Absolute power, man, corrupts absolutely. So
if somebody threw, like, a $1 billion in the middle of a ring and there's 12 of you surrounding the $1 billion. What would you do to get that $1 billion?
I mean, I may step back and just watch everybody go at it.
That's what I would do first. I would just step up, get on the top rope, and just watch the chaos. And then, you know, I'm sure you're gonna have to try and take somebody out eventually. You're not just going to get it for free. So I wanted to ask you one other thing, and I don't want to get too deep into political discussions.
Sure.
But I do find it fascinating with this show. I mean, I studied politics in college, but they were mostly like – foreign politics. I did not focus on politics at home, which is kind of weird when you think about it. You think you should be more well-versed in, you know, the political structure of your own government. But
did you
take
like a lot of courses on it?
What's that?
Did you take like a lot of courses on foreign politics?
Oh, yeah, I majored. And I've majored in political science, but it was an emphasis on East Asian politics, basically.
Oh, wow.
What I studied in college. And that was my emphasis in my econ degree as well. And, you know, today I'm podcasting, so...
that's what an interesting trajectory.
Yeah, exactly. But what I did like in this season is the fact that Frank is a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And his America Works program, I don't want to get too deep into politics,
sure.
but it kind of goes against everything that the Democratic Party kind of stands for in a very loose way.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. And I felt like – I'm sorry. Go ahead. What was your question?
No. That's. I was just curious about what you thought about that in the sense that, you know, it's crazy to me that, you know, he had to work with certain people to get elected. And then now he's just like giving the big F you to his own party as he's trying to get the nomination to be, you know, in the running to be president in 2016.
Well, I thought three very specific political thoughts the entire season, and I'll rattle them off briefly. First of all, Frank and Claire seemed very much modeled after Bill and Hillary, and I thought that was fascinating because Bill was such a like notorious ladies' man, and they just subverted that. But in the end, they're totally Bill and Hillary. And
I can see that for
and,
sure.
And so then I thought, Frank, there are moments in the series where unless someone says it, and usually someone does right when I've forgotten because of the way the story's going, I forget what party he's affiliated with because they play him on with the policy of both sides.
Yes.
And so to me, it makes the show much more about the presidency and government in general instead of making a stance and making – you know, Democrats are bad or Republicans are bad or libertarians are bad. Like it's just like across the board, you're all bad. Like,
which I'm glad they do.
I absolutely glad they do. And I think that's fascinating. And then the third thing I thought was America Works seemed their way of somehow getting away with pointing the finger at Obama and like the whole Obamacare fiasco of everything he wanted and then everything he settled for. And fiasco in terms of their eyes. I'm not making any political statements because I don't do that here because that's – I said one bad thing about American Sniper and people thought I hated America. So like I'm like – no political statements. I just – that was a failed attempt at something. And I think that was their way of looking at it. But what was so interesting is what you're saying is that what failed was something that's so against the Democratic mindset.
Yeah.
And so it was – I think it's really brilliant storytelling because it allows – you know, the most hard-hitting Republican or Democrat to watch the show on an equal playing field. And, you know, the Republicans who may go, you know, have any political leanings can point their finger and dislike Frank Underwood. But then the Democrats are going to do the same thing. So it makes the show politically neutral without being neutral at all because it's sort of taking down everybody.
Exactly.
It's amazing writing to juggle that. And so I appreciate that they do it. I didn't have any huge, smart political thought about it, just more in storytelling, how they were able to ride that line was so brilliant.
Would you vote for that?
Would I vote for America Works?
Yeah.
I'm not telling you.
Okay, well, I'll tell. But, well, okay, we don't want to get into politics. I did love it in the sense that, you know, the quote that he gave, or the quote that he gave, not gave, or whatever I just said, our need to stay in power eclipses our need to govern. And I thought it was a brilliant strategy move on his part to be so far behind in, like, the, you know, the polling of, as far as, like, approval polling and everything, and to just kind of flip the script on everybody and go about it that way. I thought was a brilliant move, regardless of, like, my political thoughts or anything like that.
No, I'm with you. When he gave his speech, if I were older and crazy, I probably would have cheered at my TV.
I did. I cheered. And I was like, I want Frank Underwood for president.
I was like this. All I wanted was a season of Frank being the best possible president he could ever be, and they vote his butt out of office. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to see him change the world.
Yes.
And then walk away. And not, excuse me, not walk away, but like drag, kicking and screaming away.
Yes.
And
his legacy would be completely crap, and
I mean, but that would have been fine with me. Or even if his legacy, if we looked at the show and went, he's depressed and miserable, but we know in 20 years, the country in that show is going to look back on him as like a savior. Like,
that'd be better. Good point.
I would have loved that. And then everything just went to crap. One thing after another just failed and failed and failed. And I feel like what they were saying is, through all your, like, House of Cards is very negative, and it's like, through all your hopes and dreams about America, government's gonna crap on all of it.
Pretty much.
so I come out very pessimistic about the country, and I start reading news during the week, and I'm like, I don't read a lot of news anymore. I used to be obsessed with the news and like what's going on in Washington and around the world, I'm not in that mindset anymore, and this show kind of put me in it for a week, and I just went, I'm not in it for a reason, because the show is right.
it's very right. The show, to me, is very accurate about a lot of things, as sad as that is to say. But yeah, I really enjoyed this season overall. I thought it was a great season. I don't know if it was my favorite. I still think season one is at my absolute favorite, because that's where we got a little bit of everything with Frank there. Because he still had the ability to be ruthless in this season. He can be ruthless all he wants, but he's not getting crap because of it.
No, yeah, I completely agree, and I think that I like that the season took all my expectations and said, no, we're not going to do what you want us to do because you want us to do it. Like, we're gonna write the show that we need to make, and I think a failed presidency really fits with what's going on, and who Frank is, because in the end, as president, you're basically organizing a party where everyone thinks they're in charge, and it's like a house party, and everyone thinks they're in charge of the whole party, and you have to make everybody happy to get, you know, the one beer you want at the party.
Yes.
And like that, Frank is not good at that. Frank is not a team player. He is a self-serving man who bullies his way around the world and has for 30 years, and I think that showing him fail is the natural extension of who he is. And like you said, yeah, he should have been in Heather Dunbar's place and get a lifelong position and stay there. And then he could have affected the world, I think. But not so much this way. I truly don't think – everyone seems to be saying we're getting a season four. I haven't seen like a straight-up official announcement. Have you seen – I know you tweeted about that. Did you get any responses?
No, I didn't get any responses. But the thing is that – let me just look at something real quick. You may have read this as well, but the whole deck of cards thing, and there's 52 cards in a deck, and four seasons, 4 times 13 is 52. And obviously the way that the season ended, I mean, I guess you could end a series on that note.
But yeah, I feel like there's no way they will.
I wouldn't be satisfied. No. I mean, that would just be... I don't know. It was so tough seeing that at the end, because I mean, as evil as Frank and Claire are, they're still that couple that I'm like, they stick together through everything. They're always there for one another. And then, you know, as Claire just walks out of the house and is like, I'm leaving you, see you later. And then, you know,
does she make it out? That's the thing, is like, does she make it out? He could run after her. He could get Secret Service on her. I mean, like, I'm curious if she actually gets out the door. Like if season four comes in and it's like literally him running down the hallway after her, I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah, that's just me. I mean, I would be fine with that. I mean, I would be fine with Frank. Like, basically, I mean, I'm not fine. Say that I'm fine with this in a moral standpoint, But I'd be fine with it if he, you know, was like, Secret Service, go get her, and, you know, basically controls her through at the White House via the Secret Service in a very evil way, because Frank was becoming more and more evil throughout the back half of this season. I mean, we've seen Frank do evil things. I mean, he threw Kate Mara right in front of that train. That was pretty evil. But the things he was saying and doing to Claire especially, mm-hmm. I looked at Frank in a whole new light of like, man, this guy is the devil at that point, because I mean, he never did that before, and it was weird seeing him act that way towards Claire in the back half of the season. But I'd be fine with that. I thought even like a crazy story is that Claire leaves him, and he comes out as being gay.
That's the thing, is like, what message does this show want to leave on?
Yeah,
and I feel like they're too honest to the nastiness of politics, and no politician would ever do that.
Exactly.
And so I don't like, I think there's like 100% chance no politician in his position would ever do that.
Yeah.
And so because of that, like, I don't think that would happen. I think it would be fascinating to see how they would write that and what would happen if they did it, but I think they're too true to the politics to do that.
For sure.
But I wish they would.
Comical if they did that at that point. Not in a mean way, but like, it would be probably over the top as far as, like you said, being true to the politics. It would be tough to pull that off. But like you, I would be interested in seeing that if they would do that.
It's like there's and I can't think of who exactly off the top of my head, for whatever reason it escapes me. There's a first lady that was – it's pretty well known in history as being at least bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
And we all kind of, like, it's known, like, it's knowledge, but when you hear talk of the president, you don't talk about that really. And it just sort of, if you're talking about people who were closeted in history, that'll come up. And so, like, to me, I feel like Frank Underwood could have that kind of legacy. Someone's going to, like, Meacham writes a book in 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, my one night with the president or something like that. And and so then people kind of know, but it's a footnote. Like, I feel like that's the reality of how that would come out. And I think it would take, like, the ultimate thing is Frank and Claire, like you were saying. And that needs to be the focus of, if it is the final season, is what happens to them ultimately. And I'll be honest, this season made me a bigger fan of Claire than I've ever been.
No doubt. And she was amazing.
Like, I seriously kind of went, I would like her as president, because she's empathetic, but she's very smart, and I think she's ruthless to her in her own degree, but it's that Frank holds her back and holds her in a different direction.
For sure.
And so I would love to see a Claire Underwood unleashed, like House of Cards Volume 2 in like 5 years, and she's become president, she's straight up Hillary and has become president, and to see what she does.
I just wonder if she's going to – in season 4, we obviously saw in this season that the people love her. I mean, she was the whole reason why Frank's approval rating was coming up, was because she started speaking prior to his speaking engagements. I mean, how crazy would that be if season 4 is like, you know, Underwood versus Underwood as they – you know, as Claire puts her name in the hat. I, you know, it would be unlikely, but I mean, we've seen other people that are very unlikely be nominated for vice president. So I could see it happening. I mean, we still have like left. There's stories still to be told of certain characters. I mean, Thomas Yates's character, the writer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still there. And, you know, back to your earlier point that it may come out in writing somewhere. He knows things.
And he
knows things about Frank that could come out. And, I mean, Kim Dickens' character, she was one of the new ones. I mean, her name was Kate in the show. I mean, she may still have something left to play. I don't know. Her character kind of got left off there at the end, to me, with a somewhat unfinished ending.
Yeah, she had a great introduction, and then the second half of her storyline sort of fizzled out to me.
For sure, yeah. And I felt that way for a lot of characters this season. I know we're trying to wrap up and everything. As far as for like Mendoza's character, it felt like a lot of the actors and actresses, like, they suddenly got other jobs and they're like, hey, I got to go. so just write me out of the show really quickly, because that happened with Mendoza. And then, the lady that that Kim Dickens replaced. Now, I get, like you said, she had a very strong introduction in the show, mm-hmm. but, like, it didn't go anywhere.
Right.
It fizzled out. So, to me, it was like, did they have to suddenly, like, switch gears? And that girl that was in that role before, that was the White House reporter, mm-hmm. senior staff reporter, she got another job, and they're like, oh, crap. Let's get this other person, and we'll write a little bit of a good story, and then nothing happens with her story. So, I don't know. And I know we got to wrap up, but Petrov.
Oh, man. I actually really enjoyed that.
He was – Lars Mikkelsen killed it.
I mean, it's like a fantasy of what would happen with like, how things work between America and Russia. It's like two boys on the playground, like, trading punches all season.
It was fantastic. And then that scene where, you know, Kevin Spacey, he breaks the fourth wall and talks to us, and he says, if I could get away with it, I'd burn him right now.
I'd push him over the stairs and burn him.
Oh, that was, like, probably my favorite one ever that he's, you know, came out and said to us. But, yeah, their dynamic together was fascinating. I really enjoyed Lars's performance in this season. He was great.
But you just reminded me of something I did miss, is more of the breaking of the fourth wall. Like, I love Frank talking to us. Like, yeah. I think it, sure, it can be used too much, but I thought it was used very little in this season compared to the past couple of seasons.
For sure.
And I missed it, in all honesty. Even if it's like, even if it was a glance or a look here or there, like, yeah. I love that part of the story, that element of the story, because he's so self-aware and it fits the character. Like, I picture Frank in his head talking to an audience. Like, for real, like, I just feel like he's just that self-obsessed. And I missed it. Like, I was like, I would like more Frank talking to me, because there's a certain tone and a certain swagger and anger in his voice, and it's just so – it's what Kevin Spacey does so well with this role. And I missed that. And I get they're probably trying to be, you know, not fitting with what they've always done so much and be a little different. But that's one element I miss. So with Frank failing so much, I would have loved to see Frank talking to us as a failure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that was the point. Like, his self-confidence was so waning throughout this season, and that's why maybe it didn't happen. I mean, that would be an interesting question to ask the creators and the writers. Was that a point to do that?
Right.
Or you know, maybe, like you said, it just didn't fit in with the season. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. We even got one of them, I think it was in episode 2 or 3, I can't remember which episode it was exactly, but he was talking to us, but then somebody kept interrupting him, and he kind of got a little irked at it, and he was like, just 1 second, and like actually had to tell that person to stop or whatever. Do you remember that part in the episode?
Yes.
It was in the Oval Office.
Was it his vice president?
I think it was. I think it was his vice president. He was trying to, you know, he was trying to talk to us.
And talk about perfect political looks, by the way. Like, oh my gosh. So funny.
Yeah, he definitely is perfect. And I'm just like, oh my God, is that, you know, that's the one that scares you the most, because you're like, oh man, the vice president. If the president dies, you're next in line, buddy. Yeah, that's a scary, scary thought if that guy ever became vice president. So
I'll be curious to see. Hopefully we only have another year to wait for more House of Cards. I would love that.
They need to get on it quick.
Yeah, they really do, because that's the thing that's making me nervous, is I'm not hearing about it. And I did some searching, and everyone seems to know it's coming, but it's just when and when are they starting it and that sort of thing. But I'm ready for it. I really want to see how this story ends, because this season I felt didn't end at a great ending point like the past two. Like last season's, with the knocking on the presidential desk, you just couldn't get any better.
No.
But this, like, it's a scene is interrupted. It just, she's walking and it cuts to black.
That's the most brutal thing ever, when we get season endings like that. And you're just like, what? I have to wait a year to see the next one?
Oh, well, because I'm binging too, I'm like, that can't be the end. There's got to be one more. There's got to be. And it's like, nope.
There's a bonus episode that's coming in 2 weeks.
Right.
Nope.
So yeah, it was a little rough to end that way. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all wraps up. I really would. I would like them to do one more season, finish it strong, and walk away with it done. That's good with me. Like, I don't need 8 seasons of this. Like don't wear out your welcome. Just do a good job and tell the story. I think they have every ability to do that.
Sure.
The show is just, it's a fantastic, fun watch. I tweeted this past week, it's my favorite soap opera of all time. Like, I just, it's so soapy and dramatic, and there's twists, and everyone's backstabbing each other, and so-and-so's wanting to sleep with so-and-so, or is sleeping with so-and-so. Like, even Petrov, like, Petrov wanted to get down with Claire. Like,
I thought that was going to happen. I was just like, please don't do that. You know, it's like the Indecent Proposal movie.
Right.
I'm just like, well, that's not going to happen, is it?
Give you your troops in Israel for one night with your wife.
Yeah, exactly. I kept thinking that was the next thing that was going to come out of his mouth.
Season 4 opens on a Russian beach. He's surfing on that surfboard, and she's laying in a bikini on the beach.
The worst gift ever.
Yeah.
That ugly surfboard that he tried to give him. I want some of that $17,000 Russian vodka.
Heck, like, yeah.
Send it to my house now.
Send it to me next year for next season. I'll drink it while I binge the full show again.
That would be awesome if they made that for next season. I mean, no, obviously it'd be a knockoff or something, but that would be so much fun to...
Let's shoot in that $17 to $30 range.
Exactly, yes. Maybe even below $15, you know. Just depends on how much money I got in my wallet.
If we're mixing, it's good.
Yeah, if you're mixing, it doesn't matter. It could be $2, and it's still going to taste nasty. So,
but yeah, it's been a good season. I enjoyed it. Definitely not as big and overly dramatic as past seasons, but I think just as dramatic in a quieter and more personal way.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's sort of why I brought up like him, the sort of him facing his sexuality. I think it's a huge deal, but it's not as big on the surface as pushing someone in front of a train, you know? It's,
yeah, for sure.
And it's stuff like that with the way Claire walking out and all these different little policy things that failed. These are, I think, huge deals to Frank because Frank never loses. And so it ended up becoming a quiet season of really big shifts. And I enjoyed the crap out of it. I like that it exists. Have you ever seen the original version, the BBC?
No, I've never watched it. I've never read the book as well.
But. Yeah, I haven't either. And I kind of like that I'm sitting in this dark zone of not knowing anything about where other stories went. Mm-hmm. And so, and I don't know if other people see a similar trajectory with this show. I haven't looked into that because I don't want to know. And so I like it feels very fresh and very political in the way that I feel like being political in this film.
Yeah, this is your perfect outlet for being political because, I mean, we see a lot of crazy stuff in the world when it comes to politics. And to me, this is the fun outlet for, you know, political discussions right here.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, you podcast a lot about a lot of TV shows. So why don't you tell everybody what you're doing so people can find you? I know that if they listen to this podcast, we're part of the Film Dispenser Podcast Network, but we have a ton of podcasts now. So tell people what you do.
Right now, I'm mostly podcasting two TV shows. It's The Walking Dead, which the podcast is called The Walking Dead, a Walking Naked podcast. You can find it right on filmdispenser.com. Or you just go search on iTunes and Stitcher. I also do 12 Monkeys, which is a new show on Sci-Fi. Not a lot of people know about it yet, but it's a phenomenal science fiction show. It's one of the best I've seen on TV in a very, very long time. It's a whole lot of fun. And that one's just 12 Monkeys, a Walking Naked podcast. That's all I'm doing right now. I used to do a whole lot more, but I've scaled them back. I still want to do some more, though.
Are you guys coming back for The Strain this summer?
Yes. Yeah, we'll be back for The Strain whenever it comes on. And we're looking to do a new TV show between April, May, June. I don't know what show it's going to be yet, but we've got to decide upon one pretty soon.
Experiment with that Daredevil.
Oh, I know. I mean, we've talked about doing Daredevil, and it would be a whole lot of fun, for me at least.
Right.
Kelly, my co-host, which happens to be my mom as well, I don't know if she's so into Daredevil as much as I am. But we shall see. There's lots of new shows that are coming out that that look fun at the very least.
Very cool. And where are you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter. It's @thenaked_nerd or @thewalkingnaked on Twitter and Facebook.
Very cool. I'm on Twitter, SpenLuke, SpenLuke. Of course, this is a part of the Film Dispenser Podcast Network. If you just search Film Dispenser, one word or two, in iTunes, you will find almost everything that we do should come up in that search return. Please rate and review, subscribe, share, tell people about us. We really appreciate it. It helps us, you know, talk to more people. And email us, filmdispenser@gmail.com, if you have any thoughts on House of Cards or Focus, which we talked about last week. I had seen it, but Patrick had not, and he saw it and liked it a lot less than I did, and I didn't even like it that much, so that's a bad sign. So,
oh, it was terrible.
Yeah, so it was
dumbest ending I've ever seen in a movie.
Will Smith, get it together, buddy. I miss you. I miss you. I don't feel like I've seen you in years.
Writers get it together.
For real.
Gosh.
He cries a lot in his movies these days. Like, he gets real emotional. And it's just like, I get it, but fun Will Smith is good too. But anyway, but if you have any thoughts on any of that film or Chappie, which just came out today, feel free to email us, filmdispenser@gmail.com, and we'll talk about your thoughts here. And if you have any major theories on House of Cards, tweet us or email us, and we'd love to hear those, and we'll definitely talk back and forth. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and every social media thing, basically, at Film Dispenser, one word, so just search us there. Thanks very much for listening. I'm not sure what we'll do next week. It's a little up in the air with Patrick traveling a lot the next few weeks, but we will have another show next Friday. So thanks very much for tuning in to this House of Cards episode. And Justin, thanks for coming on, man. It's been a while since we podcasted together. I'm glad we got to do it.
Yeah, no, it's been too long. It was a lot of fun getting to talk House of Cards. The crazy thing is, I mean, we condensed 13 episodes into maybe a 40-minute conversation, so we didn't get to cover everything. And I think I could talk House of Cards for a 13-episode podcast.
Yeah, sure. As at the beginning of this podcast, when you said it, I put the idea in my head, like, how long could I talk about this? And at the end, I'm like, I feel like we had a good talk, but we could have a lot more good talks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We probably shoehorned a little bit of the people in there at the end, but it's just like, you'd feel bad if you didn't even at least mention them because they were such fun performances.
I didn't even bring up Remy. I liked Remy. Poor Remy.
I know. Remy and Jackie, their whole deal, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of stuff to unpack in this season of House of Cards, but maybe we'll visit it again at some point.
Well, House of Cards season 1 through 3 is available on Netflix. If you have an interest in the original, it is also still on Netflix, and you can check those out. Binge watch just like the best of us, or I should say the rest of us for sure.
No, we're the best of us. If you're watching House of Cards, you're the best of us.
Absolutely. And if you're going to Marvel's 27-hour marathon, please contact us. We want to know who actually does this, and we want to hear about it. We'll have you on the show. Let me know if you do this.
I want to see pictures.
Just like the time lapse of selfies. That's what I want to see.
That's what I want to see right there. Just selfie after selfie.
Very cool. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.